I've got a really nice life. I've got four beautiful adult kids. I've got a wife who loves me. I live in a beautiful home. I live near the water. I live near the beach. Like everything about my life materially is a success on the outside. And people would by any measure judge that, gee, you're a really successful person. But those external things don't take into account how I feel about myself. And yeah, there are times I felt really dumb. I have felt ugly. I felt unlovable. I felt a failure and all. And whilst ever I tried to suppress that and not recognize that, what I discovered was actually denying part of myself. I wasn't loving all of myself.
Hey everybody, welcome to Sound Bombing. I created this show for people who want to experience a radical, life-changing journey through the sounds of my diverse guests. I hope that each sound you hear on this show will strengthen your faith, encourage your dreams, and challenge you to awaken the greatness within you.
This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new values, and a new experience.
Ladies and gentlemen, the star of the show,
Lamar Darnell Shields.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, whatever the time of the day it is, welcome to my show. I am your host, Dr. Lamar Darnell Shields, the creator of Soundbomb. And my goal with this show is to introduce you to people with the ideas that will help you unlock your full potential. Now, you may be wondering, what is going on in the background? Of course, I am not in my studio. I am on the road speaking. This is what I do for a living. I get a chance to travel all over the country speaking. And quite often, I'm typically doing my show from our studio, but I am not in the studio. But really, the studio is wherever you want to go. And I'm here in this great hotel, hanging out. Couldn't go into the lobby because it was a little too loud, so I'm here. So let's get down to it. Self-awareness is the most important step in my journey of healing and also your journey of healing. You can't heal if you're unaware of yourself. So I want you to imagine if you're feeling pain in your body, but you don't know exactly where the cause of the pain is, that could be somewhat frustrating. And it's because you're not aware of your body. The same goes for emotional and mental health. So to tackle the problem, you have to first understand the where, the why, and the how of the problem. And if you've ever felt the pain of disconnect from yourself, from those closest to you, from the world in general, then my next guest, he's very authentic and his words can help you come out of that rut. If you want to find your true freedom, you are at the right place at the right time with the right people, because he's going to invite you to take a journey into your shadow self. He has dedicated his life to healing. He has helped millions of people find healing, hope, and transformation, love, and grace. I love those words. His revolutionary breakthrough teaching from wrong thinking has become a global movement. Fast from wrong thinking has become a global movement, bringing effortless change and miracles. He is the author of Finding You, Poems and Reflections for the Journey into Your Shadow Self. He brings more than 33 years of experience to the table to help others overcome their challenges and live their dharma. Who am I talking about? My buddy all the way from Australia. I would like to welcome Steve Vincent to Sound Bombing. Steve, how are you doing today? We like to do a check-in and let my listeners know, where in Australia are you and what time of the day it is?
Hey, Dr. Lamar, how are you going? Thank you for having me on the show, and welcome to all your listeners. As you can see, yes, I do talk a little bit different to you, but the English connection is there. I live on the Sunshine Coast, which is about an hour north of Brisbane on the east coast. So it's we're a subtropical climate, a little bit like the Carolinas, I guess, in the US. And it's a bright and early 6 a.m. where I am. So, look, thanks for having me. And I'm enjoying sharing some stuff with your listeners.
Well, for somebody has gotten up at 6 a.m., your energy is already strong. Your smile is already infectious. And the glow around you, maybe it's because it's that Australian weather and what is the temperature like there right now? If you don't know, the East Coast where I live, we're under a watch of weather. We had a hurricane come through Florida. Now you mentioned the Carolinas and going to Georgia. It's early over there, man. And how's the weather in Australia? And let us know, let my listeners know a little bit about Australia. The only thing I know about Australia is Olivia Newton-John and one of the greatest movies ever made called Rabbit Proof Fence.
Okay. All right. Okay. So it's 10 degrees Celsius here, which is a little bit cool for this time of year. We're normally a little bit warmer. It's not true. There are kangaroos jumping down the street. You know, that's a common myth, especially in the States. However, when I say that, my wife and I were on vacation a couple of weeks ago, and we were driving in this sleepy little coastal village, and sitting in the front yard of this house just randomly was a family of kangaroos. And I went, oh, look, the myth is true. Like they do just, they'd come in from the bush, obviously.
Well, what's interesting, you walking out of your house, you see kangaroos. I walk out of my house and I see maybe a family member of kangaroos, deer. We have deer all over the place. Now, I don't know if you all have deer in Australia, but in my neighborhood, Stephen, you see kangaroos, you see deer all over the porches, like hanging out. And I'm always telling my sons, well, they were here before we were here. We just came and built all these homes around. Do you guys have deer there?
They're imported. They're not native to us. So they were imported for sport, you know, 200 years ago or whatever. And so they're more of a pest than anything here. But I mean, I live near the beach. You know, it's a 5-minute drive from the beach, and I love the water. It's my place of solace, you know, when I need to, and part of understanding who I am is I need that solitude and that solace and a place to just go and be where, I get messages from the spirit world. I'm able to go inward and learn about myself. So the beach is my happy place. Yeah.
So we're in the same place, man. The beach, water. I love being around water. Not a big swimmer, Steve, but I love being around water. I love the serenity of it. I love the sound. I go to sleep every night. I have Alexa and I say, Alexa, play me the ocean, play a river flowing, play a pond. So I love that. And that's my happy place, especially when we're in a world, we're dealing with the pandemic, we're dealing with family issues, political issues. And where you're from is no different from where we are. There's always some issue that's actually taking place. And so, again, it's great to hear that you do have a happy place, man. We received the book in the mail. Thank you. I don't know how you were able to get it so fast to us, because the people in the United States can't even get books that fast down the street. So we got it really, really fast. And I was really excited. And I took it with me on the road to Arizona. If you're not familiar with Arizona, have you been into the state? Have you been into the U.S.?
I have. I've been several times. Yeah. I mean, I've taken my four kids there, and we went to Disney World and several other places, New York, and I've been to Nashville, and I've been through Baltimore and, you know, Washington and play. Yeah, it's such a vast country. I mean, Australia and the US in terms of area size are very, very similar, but we've only got 25 million people. You know, so your country for Australia is vast just in the number of people that you have there. Yeah. I mean, I joke, the reason we've only got 25 million people is that everything here kills you, snakes, spiders, sharks, you know, it's a dangerous place to live. You know, that's why the population is so small.
I thank you for coming on. Thank you for getting the book to my producers and to my team to go through it. Let's go ahead. Let's dive into it, man.
Okay.
So the book, Finding You, Poems and Reflections for the Journey. And I do want you to read an excerpt from the book, because I don't have it with me right now. But before we dive into that, talk to us about shadow work. Is shadow work, and then why is shadow work so important?
Yeah, it's for a number of people, and I guess it's like anything in life, unless you look and unless you know about it, you don't know about it. And that's one of the things. And when I explain shadow work, and this is not my thing, I'll quote Carl Jung, the famous psychologist, in a moment. But when you actually know it, you kind of go, oh, yeah, I get that. I can see what it's talking about. So I always love to read a couple of quotes that really, I guess, say it better than I ever could about what the shadow is. So the first one is from the famed psychologist Carl Jung, and he says that everyone carries a shadow. And the less it is embodied in the individual's conscious life, the blacker and denser it is. At all counts, it forms an unconscious snag, thwarting our most well-meant intentions. And so when I first stumbled across that, I went, oh, wow, so if I feel that glass ceiling, if I feel even though I'm working really hard and trying really hard, if I'm feeling disconnected from myself, from my family, from my community, whatever it might be, maybe is there something in this shadow self? And as I dug deeper and deeper into that, the shadow self is that part of us that we want to hide from the world, that we deny. So all of our things like our jealousies, our dislikes, our pettiness, our envy, our greed, all of those things, because I want to project onto the world that I'm this wonderful guy, family man, an author, I write nice things and, et cetera, so that people think highly of me. Yet that's only half of my story. Like I can be quite negative. I can be a petty person. I can be quite jealous. And I believe that all of my life, and one of the reasons I've gone through these waves of unhappiness in my life, is that I've actually tried to deny those things about myself, and that never served me. And when I accepted, I can be quite jealous and I can be quite petty. The energy of those things, if that's the right way of describing it, the energy of those emotions actually dissipated. Whilst ever I denied they existed, I squashed them down, I pretended I wasn't all of those things, they always kept coming up. So I'd always get jealous about something. I'd always get cranky about something. I'd always get, I'm not saying all the time, every day, but those things would keep popping up in my life. And Dr. David Hawkins, I don't know if you're familiar with his work, in his book, Letting Go, he said that buried within all of us is the shadow or the collective unconscious. He called it the collective unconscious. And he said, it's everything that we most dislike admitting about ourselves. He said the average human would rather project the shadow onto the world and condemn it and see it as evil, thinking that his problem is to do battle with the evil of the world. He goes on, the collective unconscious means that everybody has these thoughts and fantasies. There is nothing unique about any of us when it comes to the way we symbolize our emotions. He said that everybody secretly harbors the fear that they are dumb, ugly, unlovable, and a failure. And I read that and I just went, oh, wow. Because there are so many times in my life I have felt unlovable. I have felt ugly. I have felt dumb. I have felt a failure in things, even though, this is the paradox of it. I've got a really nice life. I've got four beautiful adult kids. I've got a wife who loves me. I live in a beautiful home. I live near the water. I live near the beach. Like everything about my life materially is a success on the outside. And people would by any measure judge that, gee, you're a really successful person. But those external things don't take into account how I feel about myself. And yeah, there are times I felt really dumb. I have felt ugly. I felt unlovable. I felt a failure and all. And whilst ever I tried to suppress that and not recognize that, what I discovered was actually denying part of myself. I wasn't loving all of myself. And that whole thing about Jung thwarting your most well-meant intentions, if you're going through life denying part of who you are, then how can you find balance and acceptance and fulfillment with who you are? And so the whole part of the shadow is really accepting every part of you, even those parts of you that society would consider sinful or bad or ugly or whatever it might be. If you are able to accept that, yes, I am, even just coming, I'll give you an example, even just coming on the show this morning, I had things of self-doubt, will what I say be good enough for Dr. Lamar? Will what I say connect to his audience? And so I had all of these negative thoughts coming up. Now, no one ever talks about this, right? Because we want to be seen as the really cool person that's got it all together and stuff like that. And so when those feelings did come up, I said, oh, yeah, hello, nervousness, hello, fear. Good to see you again.
So what it sounds like is you're developing a relationship with the uncertainty. You're developing a relationship with the things that you fear the most. You're developing a relationship with those things that you don't want other people to see, but they are part of who you are. Talk to my listeners about how you got to that level. What is some of the work that you did on yourself to get there? Like currently I'm reading a book called Belonging. It's a great book. Can't think of the author. I've been talking about it so much, but I know it's written by an Ethiopian born woman who grew up in DC. And one of the things that she said that I agree with, and I was already grappling with this, Steve, in my work, I get a chance to be in many spaces, many stages, and I've never felt like I didn't belong. But there are many places, Steve, that I've gone to that I felt like I didn't fit in. And so I had to come to grips with that. Was it them? Was it me? Is it me projecting? Is it some things that my third grade teacher said? Is it some things that my mother says? Is some things that my abuelita said? Is there some things that my gym teacher said in seventh grade? So how do you get to the point, or what did you get to the point, or what strategies did you use for you to then develop a relationship with that other part of you that you are trying to hide from other people?
Yeah, and to answer that part, was it your gym teacher? Well, it's all of those things, right? It's all of that stuff going through life. And to me, the first step with any change, I think there's three parts to any change, right? The first one is being aware of it. The second step is, so being aware of it and acknowledging that it exists. You know, if I'm an alcoholic, I can't fix that unless I actually understand and accept that, yes, I have a problem. I have an alcohol problem, right? Unless I accept that and understand that and own that, then I can't fix that, right? So that's the first step is acknowledgement and understanding of what it is. I think the second step then is going manual. And what I mean by that is so often in life, we are so busy, we just go through on this autopilot in automatic, like a car, right? Put it in drive, boom, and away we go. And that speed of life, that speed of things just being on automatic, often we don't have the time and the space to, one, look within, but two, to be able to do anything about it. So step number one for me in any change process is acknowledgement of it, understanding of it. Step number two is going manual. So when something happens, you're able to go, there's X again. And as soon as you can pause in the moment and go, okay, that's that thing, then you've got a chance in the third step, which is to be able to do something about it. And when you're doing shadow work, it is that acknowledging that it's there, loving that that part of you exists, even though it might be uncomfortable. And it's when you and what I have found, and everyone is different, but what I have found as soon as I acknowledge something about myself, my jealousies, my pettiness, my brokenness, whatever it might be. As soon as I acknowledge that about myself, the energy of that emotion actually dissipates. It's a really weird thing. It's almost like the Jack in the Box thing. You're keeping it down, and the energy is always there, trying to get. As soon as you go, oh, there you are, out it pops, and the energy is gone. And you know, it's a constant process, but it's one that I have found. The more and more I do, that I look within and accept that, yes, that awful thing is part of me, the more comfortable I am, because the tendency of the human condition is not to look within, but to look without. You know, oh, I'm unhappy, therefore I need a new boat, a new partner, a new house. When I get those things, a new job, when I get all of those things, then I'll be happy. Now, what we often find is, apart from the sugar hit from a few days, weeks, months, the new boat doesn't make me happy. The new partner is just as annoying as the old partner was, and the new dress, shirt, whatever I bought that was going to make me happy, it's just hanging in the cupboard like everything else.
And I think that that's sort of like almost a form like self-medication, and we know it's not working, but we try to convince ourselves that eating, we try to convince ourselves that shopping. We try to convince ourselves of being over-sexed, over-purchasing anything, will take the place of doing the work. You know, I'm always saying to people, and when I say to people, people are me as well, Steve, do the work. If you want to make things happen, then you want to do the work. So I'm hearing you that you're doing the work, but I want to go back a little bit. Talk to me about your personal journey to self-discovery and self-healing, because I'm sure you just didn't come out the womb and said, hey, I'm here. It's all the things that happen because if, in order for you to write this book, and I want my listeners to pick up this book, it's about that thick. It's like, it's a huge book, has a lot of pages and a lot of words in it. In order for you to write that, in order for you to be reflective, you had to think, you had to go through some real things. And so quite often when I bring people on, you know, these people like you, they've spoken many stages, they've done TV interviews, radio interviews, and it sounds good, but I want people to know your journey. How did Steve get here? And then how do you remain where you are right now in a world where this always pulling you back into whispering, Steve, I know you didn't do well in first grade. Steve, I know, you know, your first relationship didn't work out. Steve, I know that you shouldn't eat that cake. Talk to me about your self journey and how do you keep focused on so you don't go back to that world.
Well, let me just start at the end there. It was my son's 19th birthday last night and I had a second piece of cake. So I fall off the wagon as well. I'm not perfect. Like, and no one is. Look, I say I'm the most boring, normal person there is because I grew up in a Catholic family, the youngest of six, so big Catholic family, you know, get a TV, folks. You know, stop this, get a TV. You know, and I followed the script of, and my parents were, I was the youngest of six, and my parents were quite old when I was born, and they grew up in the Depression and in World War II, and that brought a certain attitude of, I think, of lack and fear in their DNA. One of the other things I found out about me, if I just sort of zigzag a little bit here, is I'm an empath, so I feel things really deeply. And so I didn't realize this until I was in my late 40s that I'm an empath. I feel things. I feel people's energies. I feel when I go into a crowd. It's not that I'm a wimp or wuss. So I feel the energy of a crowd, right? And so that's part of me as well, learning that. But I know I felt their fear of lack and all of those sorts of things somewhere in my being and my psyche all of my life. And so being a good little Catholic boy, I did what my parents wanted me to do. I worked hard at school. I was ducks of my primary school. I was the top academic. I went to high school. I did well in high school. I went to university. And then I got a good job as a high school teacher. And I was good at it. I became a faculty head. I became a deputy principal. And all of this following a script that I was given. And it was given with love and given with the best intentions of wanting the best for me. But there came a point in my life where, and I don't know if I've got a specific point where, hey, presto, bang, but I think it was a slow realization over time that, hey, this model that I've been given, this doesn't really work for me because I've got all of the outward signs of success. But I'm really not happy with who I am. You know, when I go to sleep at night, there's something not right. When I wake up in the morning, I'm not happy with who I am. Now, I don't believe clinically it was depression or any of those sorts of things. It was just this uneasy feeling. And if I go back to Hawkins, you know, that everybody secretly harbors the fear that they are dumb, ugly, unlovable, and a failure. And there were times, despite all of my outward success, there was this voice inside me that was saying, you know, there's more. And I know that sounds really weird or even ungrounded in reality, but that was part of the journey. And so, you know, and my pattern in life is when something happens or when I get a message, if I don't like it, I squash it down and I ignore it and I pretend it's not there. And so I think for a good 10 years, I heard the voice saying, there's more, this isn't for you. This model is not for you. Go away. I don't want to hear it. That means I've got to change careers. That means I've got to do things out of that model that was set up for me. And that whole thing became really uncomfortable, but the voice inside that kept going, hey, this isn't for you, there is more, I guess that became louder than the voices on the outside of this is how things should be. And yeah, it took some courage to give up because, you know, I was a tenured employee with the government. You know, and there's nothing more secure than that. I had four kids. I still have four kids, you know, and a mortgage and things like that because I'd followed the script. And it, it took some courage to break out of that and to actually go on this journey of self-discovery. And that's been one of the biggest revelations for me is that what I had done my whole life was project out onto things to make me happy. I didn't realize the answer for my happiness is actually looking within and finding what makes me tick and finding out what are the things that I need to do internally and do the shadow work, as it were, to accept those parts of me that I don't like. Because one of the other things I think I did a lot of was projecting out onto other people. And I'll give you this scenario. There's, you know, when people ask me to explain shadow work, I say, well, you know, if we don't want to look at something in ourselves, we project it out onto someone else. So say you're at a big family gathering and there's this really annoying sister-in-law. Let's call her Tracy. And Tracy really pushes your buttons. You know, she's so selfish. She doesn't help. She doesn't bring enough food. So she does all of these things. I've never met a more selfish person in my life. And even when, you know, Auntie May nearly fell over, she didn't get up and help. She's so selfish. Oh, I can't stand her. Gosh. And every time we go to a family gathering, Tracy's there and it just pushes my buttons. Now, I'm sure I'm not the only person in the world who's ever had that kind of feeling, right? Yet the thing that I've come to learn is that when we are projecting that stuff out onto someone else, that's actually within us. Yet it's easier to point the finger at someone else and less comfortable to look at where that is in us. And so whatever we see in someone else, we've actually got inside us. And so if you're looking at Tracy and going, Tracy, you're so selfish, you're so awful, where is that in you? And the moment that we can accept somewhere in my life, as in now, another part of my life, maybe in the past, I've been selfish and nasty like Tracy. As soon as we can acknowledge that, that fire that is between you and Tracy energetically, that will dissipate because you're actually owning that you are those things that you're projecting out onto someone else. And so that's not easy either because your ego is saying, they're wrong, they're wrong, they're wrong, you're right, you're right, you're okay. And so you've got this multiple battles, I think, with inside you of your ego trying to keep you safe and your heart, your spirit trying to look and solve those problems that you're having. And when I say problems, those spiky emotions that keep coming up and run our life like Jung said, you know, thwarting our most well-meant intentions. I want to be happy and be part of the family, yet that Tracy, God, I can't stand her. She's so selfish. You know, so whenever you hear that, you hear yourself saying that, where in my life am I being selfish? Because it's so much easier to project out onto someone else.
And quite often what I discover when we are projecting on others, it's either a trait that we are attempting to work on ourselves, or it's something that they do that we wish that we can do. Give me an example. When we look at somebody who is late all the time, I'm going to use me as an example. Tardiness, being late, drives me crazy. And so when I see other people doing it, I think about how hard I've worked hard to be on time. I think about how much energy I put in being on time so I can be the other. Instead of them saying, well, you know they're going to start late, I want to be the total opposite. So when I see something in other people that drives me crazy, it's the one thing that I'm working on. Then on the reverse of that, when I see something that other people are doing and I can't do it, sometimes, historically, not now, I bash them for being able to do it. So like, let's just say, Steve, if you're a great writer, or if you're a great runner or sprinter or marathon runner, or if you're a great speaker, nobody wants to hear you speak. Nobody wants to run. Why run when you can walk, Steve? Nobody wants to see you paint. And quite often, I think we see a lot of that in ourselves, as you sort of mentioned. So then how do we switch that narrative? And that narrative of yours is your narrative in your mind was saying there's something greater. There's something better. You can do better. But Steve, for the millions of people that you and I get a chance to talk to, either through our writing or through our engagement one-on-one, their narrative is, you're no good. Your mother said you weren't any good. So give me some questions that I should be asking myself, or my listeners should be asking themselves, to then disregard that voice that's saying the total opposite. I think if we can give ourselves some, ask ourselves some questions, then our situation can shift. But quite often, I think that we're two things. We're either asking the wrong questions of the right people, or sometimes asking the right people the wrong questions. So what are some questions are you constantly asking yourself to then help you continue your journey of being a healer and a teacher?
Well, the first thing I want to say about that is that I wish that there was this magic pill that if I did just one thing, everything is fine, right?
There's but not one. I was told, no. My producer said you had to, I need to hang up right now because I was told that you had the blue pill and the red pill. So you're now telling me that you don't have it.
Correct. Your producer lied.
Right? You're telling me I have to do the work. You're telling me I can't say, Alexa, run the marathon for me. You're telling me I can't say, Alexa, get my life together. So I cannot put it on anybody else.
No. And even if you do, that's a very disempowering thing, right? Because then you're relying on that outside thing. And so what I'm very much is about empowering yourself and being sovereign within yourself so that you aren't relying on Alexa or the blue pill. And I guess look at it like this. Because this is a part of this journey. It's one thing that does frustrate me is like, oh man, I thought I dealt with that. You know, like that came up 3 weeks ago or a year ago. I thought I dealt with it then. And the reality is that, well, you know, you take a shower every day, don't you? You cook every day, don't you? So the normal things of survival are done every day. Why aren't the things about looking internally and working on ourselves, why aren't they done every day? Right? Because I'm so lazy. I want the magic pill. Give me the one thing.
Listen, you just made this so simple by the metaphor of taking a shower every day, the metaphor of cooking a meal every day, or the metaphor of eating. Why don't we do the work on ourselves every day? And you talked about time, and I want you to continue this, but I want to go back a little bit. You said, well, maybe we don't have the time. I want to push back a little and say, we all have the time. Is, do we make the time? We make the time to shower. We make the time to cook. We make the time to eat. And so you bring up something that's so simple as, if we do all those other things, why can't we do the things on a daily basis to make us feel good? And why don't we see?
Yeah, well, I think it's part of that collective energy of, I think it's multi-layered, that collective energy of being busy. If I'm busy, I'm noble. You know, the noble mum who's got 10 balls in the air, look, I it's okay, I can handle everything. Or the noble business owner, the noble public servant who's working so hard for everyone else, you know, so everyone's needs are always more important than our own. And if we have that trait within ourselves, well, aren't we noble and we're going to live a good life? And that's the biggest load of BS ever. You know, you because what it does, it elevates the needs of those other things, of your business, of your kids, of your job. It elevates the needs of those things above your own needs. And how disempowering is that? Why are your needs any less important, any less a priority than those other things? Sure, you've got to turn up to your job. You've got to turn up to your, I mean, God, we had four kids under five at one stage. So I understand busy, right? You know, nappies, and it was just people say, oh, wow, how wonderful. It must be great. No, it was horrible. It was nappies and meals and strapping kids into a car. And it's just that life was a blur, right? So I totally get that. But I guess, and this is one of the things I battle as well, the feeling of regret. I kind of wish I had done this work in my 20s, because then I would not have got caught so much up in that busyness of life. And this is where, like I said, you've got to not understand it and acknowledge it, but two, you've got to go manual. Because if you don't go manual and in a moment pause and go, okay, well, that's X, Y, Z, there's my pattern again. If you don't pause and do that, You just get caught up in that maelstrom of getting to work, getting the running the kids around, getting meals done, blah, 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 and all of a sudden you're too tired for anything, right? And your self-care, your empowerment is going to sleep, so you've got the energy for the next day. And that's frankly, that's a horrible way to live life. So why do we disempower ourselves by not doing the work every day? It's a really interesting question, and it's one that I continue to wrestle with, because, you know, even I've got a busy life, even I get caught up in that as well, and I have to continually go, manual go, there you go, on the treadmill again, stop and rest. Maybe that means, you know, I've got to cancel this, I've got to move that, I've got to say no to people. And this is another interesting one as well, right, is maybe you need to get better at saying no. And people go,
And no is a complete statement. It is a complete word, and it should have a period after it. The great director, Ava DuVernay, she says no without an explanation. Because what we do is we explain. So you may say, hey, Lamar, can you keep the kids? I'm like, well, Steve, nah, tomorrow I have to work out.
I'm too busy.
Those things. Instead of just saying no. And what we do is, because we are so people, we want to please people, and we don't want to let them down. We try to explain our way out of certain things, and then people can pull. Like when you tell somebody no, that's it. Like they always talk about when someone is selling you a car, once they put the keys in your hand, even though, Steve, you know you can't afford it, but when those keys are in your hand, you feel like you can afford it. And so when it's no without an explanation, it is over. Because when you're saying yes to something or someone else, you're saying no to yourself. And you just shed a little cultural light on me, because listening to you talk about being busy, I was taught that was an American thing. The more busy you are, the more acknowledged you are, the more great you are, you're going to meet. Steve, Lamar, what do you do? I got to go to a meeting. I have to go to this meeting. But to hear you say the same thing is happening here, the more busy we are, it brings up us a high standard. Well, you know, Steve is always on the road, and you know, Steve is speaking here, but we don't know if Steve is okay with that. We don't even know if Steve is taking care of himself. But in our shallow world, thinking from the outside, looking from the outside, trying to see, we think that Steve is having a great time. But the reality is he or she, they're keeping busy, as they say, they're keeping up with the Joneses. Yeah. So other people will think that they're so important.
Yeah.
And then
That is so true. And I don't believe it's a cultural thing. I think it's a human thing, you know, where there isn't, you know, because you see a lot of it on social media about the hustle and crush it and all of that stuff. And, you know, that seems so false to me. It really does. I tried that and it was horrible.
Oh, yeah. People say all you need is 4 hours of sleep. And if you're not passionate about this, you can't make it. And every day you should wake up and doing those things. And I tell you, know your body. I love meditation. I'm like, listen, if meditation doesn't work for you in the morning, do it in the middle of the day. If it doesn't work in the middle of the day, do it at night. If you would like to work out in the morning, do it in the morning. If you don't like to work out in the morning, do it at night. Know your body. With me, I can't. I don't like to work out at night because I'll create more excuses. So I need to do it as soon as I get out of the bed, because then I have fewer excuses. And my goal is to eliminate the reasons not to be successful. And so what do? I eliminate the excuses by, sometimes, Steve, I sleep in my workout gear. Sometimes my shoes are right there. Sometimes, you know, the car keys are right by the nightstand. Sometimes I keep the light on. So again, as we talk about this journey, eliminate the things where you're going to have more excuses, because the reality is that if there's an opportunity to not do it, most of us will take the road to not do it. But what we know is the most successful people, the most highly productive people, they have rituals, they have routines, they have a vision. Quite often they have a circle of people that hold them accountable, and they believe that that there's going to be something, there's going to be a greater reward on the other side once they finish whatever they're actually doing.
I want to just, Dr. Lamar, loop back just for a moment. The concept of saying no and putting yourself first, and because what will often happen either internally or externally, you'll get that pushback of someone saying, well, isn't that being selfish? Yes. It's my life. Yes. Yes. Well, and that ties in with the people-pleasing thing that you were saying. You know, so if this is you and this is someone else, if you're people pleasing, you're elevating them and their needs, and you're subordinating you and your needs. Well, that's messed up because it's your life and yet all these other needs are more important. Why isn't the balance that way? Oh, because you're so selfish. You're so self-centered. You're so mean. Yes, it's my life and I'm putting myself first. What is wrong with saying that? You know, yet society, I think religion has conditioned all of us to put our fellow man first. And I don't think that serves us because it creates a whole lot of internal stuff about other people being more important than we are. And gee whiz, if that's so disempowering again, you know, like I said, I talk about empowerment and individual sovereignty. If someone else's needs are more important than your own, you're not empowered. You're beholden to them and their approval. What a horrible way to be. You know, and I know that I've lived a lot of my life from time to time in doing that. And it's you feel terrible because you only feel good when you get someone else's approval. That's terrible. What a horrible place to be, right? Why do we do that to ourselves?
Well, we know that that is something that's taught over a long period of time. We know that we learn it early. We learn it from our parents. When we do something, we get a certain reaction. And when we don't get that reaction, then it upsets us. And so I think there's a way to get out of that ritual and routine, but it takes a while. You know, because in your book, Finding You, which is a great title, you talk about this, Finding You, Poems and Reflections for the Journey into Your Shadow Self. Now, I want you to read an excerpt from the book. And while you're getting prepared to read an excerpt from the book, what was the inspiration for writing this book?
So when COVID hit, I, like everyone, I was locked in inside and I had more time than I normally had. And I just got my pen and paper out one day and I started writing. And what I actually realized, and again, this is part of me dealing with my shadow as well, what I realized, I'd written poetry most of my life, yet I went to an all-boys school.
Same here. We got a lot in common, Steve. I went to private school, went to all-boys school. Been writing poetry my whole life as well. And you talk about a cultural connection. There are three things right there.
Yeah. And you don't really, in an all-boys school in the 80s, want to admit that you're writing poetry, right? Because you get beat up and stuff like that. Yeah. So, I bend the truth a little bit. But, you know, there's a little bit of that as a male, that's not overly masculine, right? And so,
interesting now, it's okay. Like my son went to all boys school writing poetry. We can call it poetry, call it hip hop, whatever he wants to call it. It still have a certain parameter, have a certain ways that you write it. And it's more acceptable now when a kid is writing or expressing himself.
Yes. Yes. Being able to express yourself is more, and thank goodness, it's more of an acceptable thing, yes. Right? So, and thank goodness for that, right? Thank goodness. Because the more you can express yourself, and you will, because you know, art itself and is often about our dark side, our broken relationships, our hurts, our fears, all of those sorts of things. That's how you know the creativity can come out. And so, thank goodness that is a more accepted channel these days. You know, because that will, I guess, not produce as many people like me who had to wait till later in life before they discovered that there was a different way of being and you didn't have to be a people pleaser. You could say no. You could be comfortable with all of yourself, providing you did the work, and you didn't have to look outside of yourself to try and find happiness, you know, because that never works. Happiness is fleeting. So there's the book, Finding You, as you can see. I hope that comes up on the screen. The poem I'd like to read for you, Dr. Lamar, is... it's called Just Be, and I think it loops back around to what we were talking about with doing the work, being selfish, taking time out to look after yourself and your needs above all others in this crazy hustle, busy world that we are caught up in. So it's called Just Be, and I'll just read it for you. Let go, open up, be still, find quiet, just be. Turn off, shut down, allow in, slow time, just be. Go soft, lighten up, feel love, release tension, just be. Close eyes, Shrug shoulders. Silence mind. Welcome calm. Just be. Feel good. Hold space. Listen out. Feel free. Just be. Sit there. Look around. Listen up. Breathe deep. Hello, me. And how often do we do that? When was the last time, and I'll put this to all of our listeners, when was the last time you took 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour just to sit and be without your phone, without social media, without your laptop, without the TV, without music, just you and your thoughts and your heart? When was the last time you actually did that? And I bet for many people, you go, shoot, because I know in the business of my life, and I still catch myself at times. Like I said to you at the start, I need that. One of the things I've learned about myself is I need that solitude. I need that place just to be with my thoughts. You know, and it's about knowing, you know, the old saying of the two hardest things in this world are diamonds and for a person to really know themselves. And so to know what makes you tick, I think the first step of that is just being with yourself. Nothing else, just you and your thoughts and your heart. And the more you can do that, the slower life becomes and the more then you're able to look within. And when you can look within, that's when you can see all the dark stuff about you, all the good stuff about you, and love both of those. And you can also, I think, get a bit of courage about saying no, that doesn't suit me right now. I saw a really good meme, speaking of social media, I saw a really good meme the other day, and it went something like this. It was, sorry I'm late, I got here when I wanted to. Now, that's a beautiful, empowering statement, right? You know, whereas, oh, sorry I'm late, oh, blah, 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 blah. Excuses, you know, why do we disempower ourselves? And so I think a first step in that empowerment is just go and be. I actually think just being in nature is really important. You know, having hands and feet on the grass or on the sand or on the snow, if you're in the snow, you know, just being able to ground and just be with the world and look around in awe and wonder. Watch the bird, watch the leaf fall. Just be in your environment. Look at the ant crawling along the grass. Just be.
Very well said. How can my listeners get in contact with you? And if they want to get a copy of the book, how can they purchase a copy of the book?
Yeah, sure. You can get a copy on Amazon. It's available there. If anyone wants to contact me, it's steve@stevevincentonline.com. You can also go to my website, stevevincentonline.com, and download a free poem. It's called She's Okay, I Think, which is a story about how we get so caught up in our world, we actually forget to really check in with a loved one and to really see a loved one. And the story, the reason I wrote that poem, I was talking to a dear friend one day and she was telling me how her daughter had postnatal depression and she didn't find out for 20 years after the fact. As a mother, she wasn't there for her daughter. And it hurt her greatly that she didn't see her daughter was in pain. Now, they lived apart because Australia's a big country and, you know, in the country they were, but She's Okay, I Think, is the story of how we just get too busy in our life and, oh, yeah, they're going to be okay. They seem, you know, they've got it all together. I don't need to check in. I don't need to really connect with them. And I guess it's a little bit negative in that it invokes some emotion of, gee, do I really check in with my loved ones and the people in my life? And again, that's one of the things I wish I was better at that, you know, and when you're listening to things like this show and all the others, it's easy to elevate speakers and think, well, they've got it all going on together. No, I still cook it. I don't enjoy cooking, but my wife mostly cooks, but I still take a shower every day. You know, my lawn needs mowing a couple of times, you know, so I'm still doing, I'm washing, I'm cooking, I'm showering. because that's part of me getting through life. And same with this inner work. It's a daily chore. Like I said, oh, God, give me the magic pill. I just want the magic pill to make it all. But that's not part of the process, right? Part of being human is actually looking within and doing the work so that we are empowered. If we're relying on the pill, we're very disempowered. Whereas if we go within and do the work within, that's where our power lies, right? Because if we don't get the pill, then we don't have the power. So what I'm saying is that our power lies within and being able to go within and love all of ourselves and not deny part of ourselves.
Great, great. Well, as I told you, listeners, you were in for a treat. I did not disappoint, did I? Bringing on Steve, the sound bombing. So, Steve, you can't leave just yet. I know you have so much more to share. The second part of the show is called the Super Bomb Questions. And the difference between the first part is the first part, we gave you a little more time to answer the question. The second part, these are rapid fire questions. So we need you to respond as quickly as possible. I always tell my guests to take two breaths. One more. And here we go. Steve, what's your favorite word?
Sovereignty.
What's your favorite quote or maybe a scripture or a lyric to a song?
The two hardest things in this world are diamonds and for a person to really know themselves.
What's your superpower?
Communicating.
What's your spirit animal?
A dog. A white husky type dog.
Okay. What brings you to tears of joy?
My family.
What brings you to tears of sorrow?
Humanity.
What do you wish you had more time to do?
Just be.
What's a ritual you do that helps you connect with your inner power?
Just be.
If you were in the America Talent Competition. If you were in the Mr. America Talent Competition, if you were in a talent competition, what would your talent be?
It would have to be to write words that connect people.
What's your favorite sound?
There's a small bird in Australia called the whipbird. It may be in the US as well. When I hear that in the silence of the bush, that brings peace. I get one of my other favorite sounds is probably the didgeridoo, that Indigenous people play, because that when I hear that, that's home, that's Australia. That's the essence of our country. Yeah.
Well, Steve, I want to thank you for hanging out with me and on the sound bombing set. Thank for you for hanging out, man. I know you have a busy schedule and I know you got up really early. So I really providing my listeners with some amazing, amazing stories, some amazing remedies for life, and also allowing us to be in your world and sharing your poetry with us. So thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Lamar. I've really enjoyed being here, and it was all pre-coffee as well. So I'll go and have a coffee in a minute and really perk up. So I've really enjoyed it, and keep up the great work. And, listeners, listen to Dr. Lamar and apply what he teaches, because that, for me, is the way to sovereignty, is learning about yourself. So thank you very much, and thank you, everyone, for listening.
And I want to thank all of my listeners. We cannot do this without you. I have to thank Supremacy for that dope theme music and all of you for listening. Listen, if you like this show, and you should, because Steve gave us some great information, make sure you hit that subscribe button. You can also check us out on every platform. If you want to see the video of these, all of our shows, go to my YouTube channel. Please leave a comment. Let us know what we're doing. If you want to come on the show, reach out to my producer, Maria Sotero. You can check out me at drlds.com. And as always, believe that something wonderful is about to happen, but some people miss the message because they're too busy looking for the mess, but not you. Thanks for tuning in. And you've been listening to Sound Bombing. Peace. Thanks a lot. We're going to leave you with another poem by today's guest, Steve Benson.
The wind blows and we don't hear it. We're too busy rushing, doing, striving, pushing. The clouds roll in and we don't even look up. There's money to be made, bills to pay, trinkets to acquire. The waves curl over and crash down, but rarely do we see. We don't stop in awe. We walk on to the next thing. The rain trickles down, yet we have to get it all done. We don't marvel at the life it brings because there's important stuff to do. The majesty of life in faith goes on around us. We're too busy and too frantic to slow and care. And this is why we're unhappy inside, see?